Now, from Hollywood, romance. Romance. Transcribed stories of love and adventure, of comedy and crisis, of conflict and human emotion. Today, the love life of Frederick Carleton Haskell, the humorous story behind the scenes of a famous correspondent, starring Hans Conried and Larry Thor in Old Army Buddy. Funny thing how long it takes people to spot a phony. I'll give you, for instance, Frederick Carleton Haskell, foreign correspondent, author, newscaster, and lion of the lecture halls. You've read his dispatches from Europe.
The Prime Minister assured me today during a two-hour chat at the Foreign Office that no further concessions could be expected until the present attitude of the pressure powers has been ameliorated.
You've heard his pear-shaped tones on your radio.
I do not think it is too much to expect that the presidential campaign will result in some astounding and radical changes by the time the final tally is made next November. On the other hand, there is persuasive reason to believe that the status quo may well be maintained. Only time and the relentless march of great events will tell.
Have you any idea what he said? But then, what difference does it make? He's America's idea of the perfect foreign correspondent. Middle-aged ladies mob him at Middle Western lectures, and book clubs plead for the privilege of publishing his pronouncements. Yes, he cuts quite a figure in public, does Frederick Carleton Haskell. In private, well, that's another matter. Those of us who, for one reason or another, have been close to him for enough years have seen through him for a long, long time. Me, for one, and his lovely wife, Anne, for another.
In the Shadow of the Kremlin, by Frederick Carleton Haskell. Dedication to my wife, without whose steadfast devotion, inspiring confidence, and daily concern, these pages could not have been written. Preface.
Fred.
At the outset, I wish to make it clear that during the 10 days I spent in Moscow...
Fred, I want to talk to you.
Later, Anne. I've just started to dictate a new book. During the 10 days I spent in Moscow, I went wherever I wished and talked with whomever I wished.
Fred, what I've got to say is more important than the new book.
Nothing is more important, Anne, darling. I am, therefore, the man best qualified to bring you a complete and unbiased report of conditions today in the shadow of the Kremlin.
What took so long, Fred?
The Soviet picture is vastly complicated. I had to give it at least 10 days.
When did your plane get in?
4:30 this morning. Miserable trip. Headwinds all the way. Made all the stops. Shannon, Iceland, Gander.
Why didn't you let me know when you got home?
No sense waking you up at 6 o'clock in the morning. Anyway, I want to get started on this piece while the impression's still fresh in my mind. I've got a deadline to meet, you know.
How well I know.
You'll have to keep going, you know. Stand still and you start going backward.
Well, you've got to stand still for this, Fred. I want a divorce.
You must be kidding.
It's no joke, Fred. I've been thinking about it for a long time, and, well, while you were away this last trip, I've made up my mind. I just want out.
But why? You've got everything a woman could ask for. You're young and beautiful and the wife of a famous man. Why, you're the envy of every woman in America. What more do you want?
A divorce.
Impossible.
I don't want to be ugly about it, but I will be if you force me to.
You have no grounds for divorce.
Oh, yes, I have.
What?
Infidelity.
Absurd. I never looked at another woman since I first met you.
Nevertheless, you're not in love with me. You're in love with someone else.
Who?
Yourself.
Anne, that comes close to being an insult.
It's the truth.
In your opinion, certainly no judge would concur. No, Anne, it's out of the question. I will not disillusion the American people. They believe in me, so they believe in you and in our marriage. In a way, Anne, you and I, we are a symbol.
Oh, rubbish.
Why do you always have to create some kind of unpleasantness just as I'm in the middle of a job that requires all of my faculties? It's almost as though you planned it that way.
Unpleasantness?
Unpleasantness, yes. As I remember it, you had the flu all during the writing of In the Shadow of the Eiffel Tower. While I was working on In the Shadow of Big Ben, it was something else. An altercation with the interior decorator. I don't know. And now this. It's most inconsiderate, Anne. Really, inconsiderate.
I'm sorry if it's inconvenient, inconsiderate, and unpleasant. But I want a divorce.
Anne, you are trying my patience. And now, if you'll excuse me, I really must get on with the book. I'm facing a deadline, you know.
Too bad you refuse to face facts.
Had the reader been so fortunate as to stand in the shoes of this reporter on the Red Square 2 weeks ago, he would have realized the tremendous forces which have been unleashed in this book.
I learned of this newest development in the career of Frederick Carlton Haskell the same afternoon in the tap room of the Press Club. Usual regulars were at the bar: Worthington Davenport of the Intercontinental News, Teddy Sly, sports editor of the World, J. Bates Carter, news analyst for the Federal Network. The conversation was pleasant, aimless, mostly shop talk, and then the great man made his entrance like the Duke of Edinburgh inspecting a cattle show.
Well, it certainly is good to be back home again.
Where did the sports reporter come covering a Mahjong tournament?
No matter what they say, there's no country like the good old USA.
Oh, you've been away?
That's right. Moscow this time. And, boys, I'm here to tell you
that... So what else is new?
Well, you don't want to hear.
Look, I tell him.
The conversation began again, and the great Frederick Carlton Haskell stood there with egg on his face, the backs of his colleagues turned toward him. Then he saw me.
Jerry, my old army buddy. Am I glad to see you.
Oh, hello, Fred. So you've been to Moscow, huh?
Affirmative. Oh. Just got in this morning. I've already finished 2 chapters in the book.
You don't waste any time, huh?
Oh, can't afford to. Got to keep going. Can't stop.
Yeah, I know. You stand still and you start going backwards.
Well, that's about the size of it. Jerry, tell me something.
Uh-huh.
What's the matter with those guys?
Just jealous, I guess.
Yes, I suppose that's it.
Contemptuous would have been a better word. There wasn't a man at the bar whose toes hadn't been trampled by Frederick Carlton Haskell as he shouldered his way to the head of the line, including me. Just after the war, I was slated for the World Affairs column on the Gazette. But after Haskell got through charming the publisher's wife, well, I'm still on the city desk. I had every bit as much reason as the others for cutting Haskell stone-cold dead, but I also had a much bigger reason for being his old army buddy.
You are my friend, aren't you, Jerry?
I hope so.
Well, something's come up, and I feel you're the only one I can discuss it with.
Well, I'm flattered.
Let's go over to that table in the corner.
Okay.
I wouldn't want any of those big ears at the bar to hear this.
All right, Fred, what's on your mind?
Jerry, I'm worried about Anne.
Why? She sick?
I'm afraid so, Jerry. Very sick. Mentally sick.
What makes you think so?
She wants to divorce me.
Oh, no. Why?
I ask you why. Haven't I given her everything? Clothes, furs, jewelry, beautiful apartment?
You certainly have.
Well, a woman would have to be crazy to want to throw those things
over. Oh, it all depends on who she's throwing them over for, though.
What do you mean?
Well, who's the other man?
There's no other man.
How do you know? Did you ask her?
No, it never occurred to me. How could she possibly be interested in any other man?
I don't know. Women sometimes do the darndest things. Hey, let me ask you something, Fred.
Go ahead.
Do you love Anne?
What's that got to do
with it? Did you ever love her?
Now, look, old army buddy, let's not confuse the issue. The trouble with women is they expect the honeymoon to go on forever. A man's got his work to do. If he's going to keep going ahead, he's got to get the jump on the other fellow. Can't stand still, you know. Hand holding in the moonlight doesn't buy any square-cut diamonds, you know.
But a hand in the moonlight is a lot warmer.
I don't get you.
Never mind. What are you going to do about this?
Just take her to the best psychiatrist in town, no matter how much it costs. The poor girl needs help.
That she does.
Meantime, Jerry, not a word about this to anyone.
Of course not.
Thanks, old army buddy. Thanks a lot.
That you, Fred?
Yes, Anne.
Will you be home for dinner?
Yes, but I'll have to work. Just have Stella bring me in a tray into the study, huh?
All right.
However, before I get back to the desk...
Yes?
I've been thinking about our conversation this morning, Anne. I've come to some conclusions.
Yes, Fred?
I've made an appointment for you tomorrow with Dr. Zlotny.
The psychiatrist?
Best man in New York.
Oh.
Well, what's so funny?
Oh, your conclusion. You think I'm crazy.
Well, now, hardly that. Let's just say you're disturbed. Your sense of value's out of adjustment. I'm sure that you won't require very long analysis, but believe me, and you do need help.
Fred, all I need is a divorce.
Well, you see, you just don't make any sense. Just like that, you want a divorce. Now, if there was another man, I could understand.
Oh, but there is.
There is?
Yes.
You didn't tell me.
You didn't ask me.
Well, this puts the whole matter into a different light.
Why?
I had no idea you'd stoop so low behind my back, Anne. While I'm away earning a living, I'm amazed. I'm shocked. Who is this cad?
A man. All man.
Now, we'll see if he's a man. You get him on the phone. You tell him to come over here right now. Now, that'll throw me behind in my schedule. You make it tomorrow. You tell him to be here tomorrow at 6.
What do you intend to do, Fred? Horsewhip him?
No, I doubt if that'll be necessary.
I'm not sure I can reach him.
Well, if you want him so badly and he wants you, you'll have him here tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. If he exists.
What does that mean?
You figure it out.
You really can't imagine me preferring any other man to you, can you?
Frankly, no.
I've watched you huff and puff and blow yourself up year after year, Fred. And I've wondered when the balloon would burst. Because it's got to, sometime. Only... I didn't want to be the one to stick the pin in it. I still don't.
You can't frighten me, Anne. I shall expect to face your lover here tomorrow night at 6.
Hello?
Well, old army buddy, you were right.
About what?
Anne, there is another man.
Oh, who is it?
She refused to tell me, but I've ordered her to have him here tomorrow night at 6 o'clock.
Do you think that's wise?
Of course it's wise. When she sees the two of us together in the same room, what chance will a poor idiot have? Probably some Madison Avenue type in charcoal gray and pink, or a Hollywood actor with padded shoulders and long lashes. Well, I'm not afraid of competition, Jerry. I never was. I'll make an idiot out of the idiot.
This I'd like to see.
Well, come on over, then. It's all in the family. And you're part of the family, old army buddy.
We'll return to romance in just a moment. No medication we know of will render difficult choices easier to make. Young social worker Diane Ellis, engaged to a dedicated research doctor, must weigh for herself, therefore, the prospect of a marriage that demands personal sacrifice against a comfortable life as the wife of a less philanthropic man. Fortunately, Dr. Barton Crane understands her problem. His wisdom illuminates Diane's conflict as it develops behind the scenes at City Hospital. Don't miss this deeply moving drama on City Hospital today over most of these same stations. And now for the second act of Romance. Following evening, I arrived early at the Haskell apartment. I didn't want to miss a moment of this historic meeting between the great Frederick Carlton Haskell and the man who had stolen his wife's love. The three of us had little to say to each other as we awaited the arrival of the guest of honor.
I'll get it.
Annie! How's my little old Annie Boo today?
Hello, Jeb, darling. Come in.
How's my little old smoocher lonesome, Jeb?
Not now, sweetheart. I have some people here. I want you to meet them.
Well, then, you lead the way, Shug. Any pal of yours is a pal of mine.
Whatever Frederick Carlton Haskell was expecting, it certainly wasn't this. A tall man going to fat, his sparse hair plastered across his bald pate, his hands as big as hams, his face as flat as Pecos County. Across his ample chest dangled a diamond-encrusted animal's tooth. On his lapel glittered another fraternal emblem done in rubies. The letters, J-E-B, were stitched in red on the sides of his expensive black cowboy boots. He flung his 10-gallon hat onto a chair and he roared into the room like a prairie tornado, his great paw extended to Haskell.
Tolliver's the name, J. Stewart Tolliver. Most folks call me Jeb. After Jeb Stewart? Yes. My grandpappy served with old Jeb when he whomped you Yankees of Chancellorville. That's how I come by the name. I didn't catch yours, friend.
Frederick Carlton Haskell.
Oh, you must be Annie Pooh's husband.
I am.
Well, I gotta congratulate you, Freddy. That's quite a little lady you have there. Quite a piece of work. Yes, sir.
And Jeb, dear, this is our friend, Mr. Davis.
I'm glad to meet you, Mr. Tolliver.
Call me Jeb, son. Folks all call me Jeb. Well, what's your handle, Mr. Davis? Jeff?
No, Jerry.
Oh. With a last name like Davis, the first name ought to be Jefferson.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, no matter. Time folks forgot the trouble between the states. Would do if you Yankees wasn't always bringing it up. Annie Pooh, sugar, I'm as dry as a real grand and fly time. You got some.
What do you have, darling?
There's just a little drink and whiskey and branch water.
Jerry?
I'll have a scotch and soda, dear.
Fred?
I don't feel like anything right now, thank you.
Well, now, let's all sit down a spell and get to business. I guess Annie Shug's told you I'm fixing to marry up with her soon as she's divorced up.
She told me.
Good. Then it's all settled?
Nothing settled, Mr. Tolliver.
You just call me Jeb, Freddy.
I said, Mr. Tolliver, nothing settled.
Well, now, ain't that a crying shame? Maybe you don't understand how unhappy this little lady is, Freddy. And when little old Annie Pooh is unhappy, I'm unhappy. And when I'm unhappy, I sometimes get ornery. You wouldn't want me to get ornery now, would you, Freddy?
Are you threatening me?
Well, now you just interpret my remarks any way you like to, son.
Now, boys, let's keep our tempers. Jeb, darling, your drink.
You didn't put too much branch water in, did you, Wumsy Pickle?
Just as you like it, darling.
That good.
Jerry?
Oh, thanks, Sam.
Sure you won't have a drink, Fred?
No, thanks. I suddenly don't feel very well.
Why, what's the matter, Fred?
Nausea, dear. Acute nausea. I need some fresh air now.
I'll go with you, Fred.
No, Nate, it's me that's sick.
You think you're the only one? Come on, let's go back to the club, eh?
Hey, well, Freddy, son, we ain't settled nothing yet, including your stomach.
All the way down in the elevator, Frederick Carlton Haskell was silent, his face greener than I'd seen it since the day the first buzz bombs fell on London. That was the day before he arranged for his immediate recall to the States. But when the fresh air hit him out in the street, anger brought the color back to his face.
Monstrous. Monstrous is no other word for it.
Want to walk or should we take a cab?
Walk. Walk it off. Think it out. After all I've done for her, all I've given her. But there can only be one explanation. She must be out of her mind. Mad. Stark, raving mad.
Well, that could be.
But she should be committed to an institution.
Don't you think that's going a little too far?
Why? Obviously, she's taking leave of her senses.
Well, look, it wouldn't look good for you, since you'd be the one who'd commit her.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
There's another way to handle this, of course.
What's that?
Just give her the divorce.
Make myself a laughingstock from coast to coast?
On the contrary, make her the laughingstock.
I don't follow you.
Look, Fred, if she'd fallen for a good-looking guy younger than you, if she'd lost her head to a movie actor, say, or a colleague like Worthington Davenport...
Oh, heaven forbid.
Well, exactly. Then you would be a laughingstock. But she's gone goofy over a clown, an ignoramus. When that story gets around, everybody will think she's crazy. Everybody will say that she's the ingrate, unworthy of the position that you've tried to give her.
Yeah. Yes, I see what you mean.
You just leave it to me, pal. I'll see that the story gets around.
Jerry, old army buddy, you're a real friend.
It's a privilege and an honor.
Let's go back and get it over with right now.
I'm with you all the way, old army buddy.
Why, Fred, I thought you...
That you, Freddy boy? Got your stomach saddled? Good, good. Now, you just take a glass of this here drinking whiskey, and she'll be settled for good, I assure you.
She is settled for good, Mr. Tolliver.
Mr. Shucks, Freddy, when you gonna start calling me Jeb? Folks all do.
Mr. Tolliver, I've decided to give Ann the divorce.
Oh, Fred, I could almost kiss you.
That won't be necessary, dear.
Now, that's the best news I heard since Yellow Rose number 3 come in the gusher. A big one. You come over here and snuggle up to Pappy, sweet
man. Please, spare me the prenuptial spectacle. There are a couple of details to be gone over, and then I'll be on my way.
Where are you going?
Now, it's occurred to me that I might effectively expand the scope of my new book by including a definitive evaluation of the Iron Curtain countries. I should be away at least 6 weeks, during which time I assume, Anne, that you will be residing in Reno.
You are so thoughtful sometimes, Fred.
Well, naturally, under the circumstances, Anne, you wouldn't expect any alimony or property settlement.
Naturally.
You blind or something, Freddy. Can't you see? All she wants is out.
Well, I guess that covers everything. There's a plane out of Idlewild for Vienna in an hour and a half. I can just make it.
But you've got to pack.
And I'll pick up the bag I keep at the club for emergencies. Well, goodbye, Anne.
Goodbye, Fred, and thanks.
There's nothing to thank me for. You brought this on yourself.
Now, mind, Freddy. You ever get down Waco way, you be sure to drop in on little old Sugar Pie and me.
That is very doubtful, Mr. Tolliver. My work concerns itself only with the more civilized parts of the world. You coming, Jerry?
Not yet, Fred. I feel badly in need of a drink.
Very well. Thanks for everything, old army buddy, and you'll follow through, won't you?
You can count on me, pal.
I'd like to leave you with this parting thought. I have witnessed the destruction of war, the internecine strife of revolution, the fall of governments, and the miscarriage of justice in a score of countries, from Tierra del Fuego to Spitsbergen. But never have I seen a more tragic and irreparable error than has been committed in this room this evening.
Well, I'll be horn-swoggled. What's some of them Western terms? I'll be a longhorn maverick. Just what in the world all those big words mean that he said...
You were wonderful, Harry. You were...
Oh, I didn't think I could...
It was your greatest performance.
Well, I have to admit, I never had such a good audience. Audience? Oh, I almost forgot. West of Rimrock goes on over Channel 14 in less than an hour, and you know those kiddies, and the sponsor ain't going to like it if old Sheriff Sal is late.
How much do I owe you?
Oh, well, after it doesn't cover this kind of performance, Jerry.
Well, say, how about $100?
Well, that should be sufficiently on the scale.
There you are. I'll make it $1,000 if I could. It was worth it.
Oh, thanks a lot, Jay. Well, I got to be moseying now, ma'am. Before I go, I want to wish you and your young fellas as much happiness as old Paint and I have known together. And if you're ever down Waco way, why, yeah. So long, kids. Good luck.
Goodbye.
Come here.
Mm-hmm. Darling. Is there a plane for Reno tonight?
Dozens of them. So who wants to hurry?
Romance is produced and directed by William Frug. Old Army Buddy was written by William N. Robeson, based on a story by William Keneally. Featured in the cast were Hans Conried, Larry Thor, Helene Burke, and Paul Frees. Music is supervised by Jerry Goldsmith. In today's story, any resemblance to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This is Dan Cubberly inviting you to hear Romance, transcribed next week at this same time. Not every day in those rough, tough early days of Dodge City was as difficult for U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon as the day that folks got the idea that Marshal Dillon was afraid of Nick Search. Now, Nick was a gambler who could deal as fast as he could shoot, and that was fast. And since his idea of a good thing was a sure thing, in shooting or in dealing cards, the only real gamble he ever took was getting caught. That is, until the day he tangled with the Marshal. That's the exciting day you'll hear about on Gunsmoke in just a few moments when Gunsmoke follows over most of these stations.